It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We might have viewed some YouTube clips during the break.
Yeah, you forced that on me. Can we we agree on something? Let's just raise chicken
just
the right way.
Let's get rid of the
Let's
chicken
raise chicken
conversation.
The right way. Yes. No more chicken conversation. Right. We're going to raise chicken the right way moving
justice
forward.
Justice for chickens. That's all I want. One of our new colleagues, Donovan Bennett, host of the new podcast, Going Deep on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, joins us. Hey, congratulations on the new show, Donovan.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Are you excited? You're a radio guy now.
I guess. What does that mean? I mean, I've always been ugly, so...
Okay,
stop it.
Right.
Stop.
I've always had a radio
stage. We saw that new podcast art.
That's pretty cool.
That's why it's art. I have creative license to make myself look exactly how I want. No, I'm super excited. I love the platform and the medium, the opportunity, you know, to be a little bit national and talk to our friends in Calgary and Vancouver and really anywhere that you get a podcast, quite frankly, because as you two both know that, you know, as soon as this is on demand, it is international, not just national, because people can get it on their phones wherever they are. I'm really excited to get to work with Shohei Lee, who many people know, if they listen to this station often, is super talented and deserves much more runway for his really smart takes. And he's going to be producing me and keeping me, hopefully, on track and on message. And so we've got some time to really dig deep, hence the name, on some subjects. And, you know, you guys know there's so much to talk about. You feel like you need to move from one thing to other, and we're going to do the opposite. We're going to say there's lots of great shows, yours included, that are surround us in our lineup, and you're going to get great analysis on what's going on night to night on those, but we're just going to pick one thing and really go hard on it. So I can't wait to get started.
Yeah, and so when you released kind of like the rundown of it, I should mention it's going to air live 11 a.m. Eastern time, and you can catch it, as you said, nationally as well. I just wanted to read kind of your tease for it, because I think it's really important to highlight that it's going to be different. It's not just going to be, hey, breaking down the X's and O's. Our daily show takes a look at how sports intersects with health, music, fashion, race, religion, gender, politics, and everything in between from both a national and international perspective. Just wanted to dig into that, go deep into that a little bit. Is that something that I know personally has been a passion of yours, but something that you think can help the media landscape in general with radio and opening that up to even a show like ours, where we do a lot of analysis, we do a lot of next day stuff, but maybe a trend that you're hoping that can continue, you know, with sport media in general?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, trying to get my Gretzky on and skate where the puck is going, not where the puck is. If you look at the podcast landscape, right, and certainly the daily talk show landscape, whether it's studio shows or radio shows like yours, we're kind of oversaturated with people, you know, quote unquote, embracing debate or people breaking down what happened last night. What can you expect to happen the night before? And there's a good reason for it. There's lots of interest in it, but there's a lot of really talented people doing it. So for me to do essentially the same thing that a bunch of other people are doing, maybe as well, maybe not as well as them, didn't make sense. And so I wanted to offer a little bit of variety. And that is the way my mind works. I had a minor in Phil in university. And quite frankly, that's like the only stuff that I remember. But when I look at sports topics, I kind of look at it from a deductive reasoning standpoint. Okay, well, what are our premises? What are ones that we can all agree on? And if we agree this premise, and this premise, can we all agree on this conclusion? And maybe we won't, but hopefully if we kind of show our math on how we're thinking about these topics, we'll have some shared understanding. And there are so many topics, as you guys know, and have to figure out what you're going to talk about from a day-to-day basis, that aren't just sports stories. We've been flooded with them in the last little while, and I don't think, quite frankly, that's going away. And so we wanted to create a little bit of space in our audio lineup to go a bit deeper on some of those topics. And I don't know if it's necessarily a trend that we'll see across the board, but it's something I'm looking to exploring, seeing if there is audience there, and then seeing how we can grow that audience.
And I'm sure there'll be space, too, for a little bit of, you know, the X's and O's, because we want to get some X's and O's from you as well here, because we want to go kind of across the sports landscape, get your opinion on a couple of things going on. And I think we should start with the Raptors. You know, we've seen a bit of a different schedule, six games have been played at, like, in sort of series form where they're a back-to-back, whether it's a home-and-home, but against two teams in consecutive days or over consecutive games. And it's kind of thrown a little bit of a wrench into the schedule, it seems. It seems like the Raptors are dealing with something that's a little bit new. But all in all, they've had a pretty solid start with Pascal Siakam looking really strong and Fred getting back in the lineup here and a lot of exciting pieces. What's your temperature check on the Raptors through the first little bit of the schedule here?
It's a really good question because, like, you know, the formula for happiness in life is, like, expectations minus results, right? So how happy are you with the Raptors? Well, what were your expectations to start the season? And my expectation was not necessarily for them to hoist the Larry O.B., but for them to be trending in that direction. And essentially this year for me, for this team, is all about R&D, research and development. Who do we have that can be cornerstone pieces moving forward? Can this one point guard and, like, 7'6", 7'9" velociraptor, switchable player strategy, can that actually work over the balance of an 82-game season? And so I like what I've seen from the Raptors thus far, because despite the fact that they're all-star from last year, Fred was down with an injury. He didn't really miss a beat because Scotty was able to point guard. Now they're going to have to weather the storm with Pascal being down, but you know, it's like Masai and Bobby Webster have DJ Khaled in the office at OVO. It's like, another one. Coloco, of course, blocking shots at the rim. It looks comfortable offensively. And other teams are like, how did we miss on this guy? So my expectations for this team is just to compete every night, be the person at the LA Fitness gym who is annoying to play against because they're picking you up full court all of the time and clapping nonstop when they're getting mad deflections. And essentially, to have little depth because Nurse likes to play who he likes to play. But when you lose someone, it's not a drop-off when you're losing a star player on a quote-unquote super team. And so far, they've lived up to those expectations. And I think it'll be a team that's not in the play-in, but someone you don't want to play against in the playoffs. And at this point in their evolution, I think that's great.
I think it was a little bit easy to get excited with the way that Pascal Siakam started the season. Maybe that led to, hey, higher expectations than we thought for this Toronto Raptors team, because he was playing like a top five player in this league, which is something he stated coming into the season is something he wanted. I know he's out now, which is a tough one, but how impressed were you with the start for Pascal Siakam? And does that change maybe your outcome of what he can do this season when he does return?
Well, I think it changes the conversation on the makeup of the roster, because over the last couple of years, a lot of people felt Pascal, he's a Jag. He's just a guy. He's really nice. And he was the third best player on a championship team, but could he be the second or even best? We don't think so. And Pascal has talked about how the bubble impacted him, how the negative interactions on social media impacted him. And you're right. He was playing at a third team. He's playing at a second team, probably first team all NBA level when he got hurt. So I was actually really upset, not so much on what it meant for the team moving forward, but what it meant for him moving forward. If he has to miss an appreciable amount of time, he missed 11 games last year, and we'll see as he's being reevaluated in 2 weeks, not necessarily coming back in 2 weeks. But not long ago, this summer, people were like, don't you even think about putting Scotty Barnes in a trade. Don't even call and say, Scott, never mind Scotty. Pascal, yeah, we'll think about it. I don't think people are saying that right now. I think people are guarding both of those chess pieces, really, really closely. And so I do think, actually, if this team, because they have so much surplus in wing depth, something that the rest of the league wants, and they have all their picks for their foreseeable future, if they are really pushing, could we see them make a move at the deadline to speed up that timeline? Yes. But do I think, certainly not Scotty, but is Pascal in that conversation? No, I don't. And I think that may be the change that we've seen based off of how well he's played to start the year. He's shown, you know, this front office and this fan base, yeah, I can be the best player on a championship team. I just need that championship team around me.
We're chatting with Donovan Bennett, who's announced yesterday that he will host a new show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan called Going Deep, which will be on daily. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Donovan, it's a hard right turn from the Raptors to Kyrie Irving, but it's one worth making. You wrote recently that this is still a story because he being Kyrie Irving, still wants it to be. When it comes to this story, you know, he's going through the punishment thing and it's all BS, really. But when is it too late too late to make amends if you're Kyrie Irving in this situation?
Probably now. And when we were talking about Kyrie Irving in his last controversy, in his spreading of some misinformation about the COVID-19 pandemic and vaccines that were, quite frankly, saving people, you know, we talked about him in relation to Aaron Rodgers, who, I mean, at the very least, he may disagree with Kyrie Irving, but he was standing on what he believed on, where Aaron Rodgers kind of lied to us and then, you know, tried to act like he did or didn't say, you know, something. Well, we don't really know where Kyrie stands. He's never clarified what in the film that he shared, which is trending number one on Amazon in ethnic studies, which is shocking and scary.
Yeah.
He's never clarified what in it he believes or doesn't believe. He's been vague about the fact that he's a beacon of light and he is a free thinker and he believes in all faiths and religions. But he hasn't said, you know, just a very simple sentence, I am not anti-Semitic. And he hasn't said, well, actually, no, I think the Holocaust did happen, quite frankly, and speak down in denouncing some of the many tropes that was shared in that book and film. And so until he does that, I don't want to certainly speak for the Jewish community, but I can speak for someone who has some sense of morals and heart. Like, I don't really think there's much of a way back. And when you're meeting with the Anti-Defamation League and you don't even do the necessary gesture of giving them the courtesy of meeting in person, you send your mother-in-law and your agent. That tells me that you actually don't care about finding a solution or reconciliation. You don't care about how people perceive you or how they feel. You just care about being stubborn and not giving in. And so I wouldn't be surprised, quite frankly, if he's played his last game with the Brooklyn Nets. And he's shown us in the past he's willing to sit out and lose respect and lose money. And this seems like it's going down a very similar path.
Yeah, despite he says, like, the reality, as you mentioned, of that film trending and rising the charts and the book doing the same thing, like, that's the real dangerous thing here. And I worry that it could be just the tip of the iceberg. I don't know if you saw that PTI clip trending, I think, I guess it was yesterday, where Wilbon and Kornheiser were talking about the misinformation and just the power that athletes have if they believe something and they believe in conspiracies or whatever, and they share that information and how it can snowball. I mean, it aged amazingly well, because they were talking about Steph Curry not believing that, you know, they landed on the moon and how dangerous that was. And now 5 years later or whatever it is, the reaction and the result of Kyrie Irving's actions laid out in a statistical form, like quantitative results from how he's conducted himself and what kind of effect it can have. You think it's just the tip of the iceberg for this situation, where athletes unknowingly have all this power that really is dangerous?
Yes, no question. And they're influencers for a reason, because they influence us in terms of their taste, sensibilities, and our love of sport, you know, our love of fashion, what they wear, and, you know, their viewpoints on things. Like, no, athletes aren't smarter than a bunch of people, and we probably shouldn't care about what their views are. But, you know, quite frankly, a lot of people do. And the Steph Curry example is a great one, because after he floated, you know, almost jokingly that, yeah, you know, they're going to get us for this, but, you know, we didn't really land on the moon, and there was backlash, he spent the time, did the research, hosted an IG Live with, you know, people from NASA, debunking some of those myths, you know, created, you know, a version of his shoe that was NASA inspired with money and going towards, you know, science research. So he said, I'm accountable. I'm going to use my platform for positive in this situation. And that's why I'm not for, you know, cancel culture. I'm for accountability culture. If you make amends and use your platform to show how you've changed, then I think you do deserve not to be tarred and feathered in public square, but to have a normal life and do what you do really well, which is play a sport at a high level. Kyrie has never, ever taken steps to do anything like that, with the multiple conspiracy theories that he's floated out there. This is just the most recent one. I mean, flat earthing is not necessarily as serious of a cause, because it doesn't really impact him. I don't think the earth is offended that he thinks it's flat. But this is much more serious, because we've seen, coming off of the heels of Kanye, that in the United States, on the side of a stadium in Florida, you know, Kanye was right, was being that Kanye was right about the Jews was something that people saw, you know, on flags over highway overpasses. And we know since 2021 that anti-Semitic-led hate crimes have risen in the United States. So this is not just an issue without a causal reaction. And that's why Kyrie can say that he didn't promote it, but the truth is he did.
I know you wrote a really good piece on this as well, and everybody can check that out at sportsnet.ca. I appreciate the insight on it and, you know, somebody bringing a lot of attention to it online, which is deserved. And the analysis of it and the criticism, I think, is much deserved. Donovan, let's move to a positive in the NBA. The Canadians in the NBA have come out red hot to start this season. Benedict Mathurin, Shaedon Sharpe, Shea. I mean, it's just been a really good start for our guys here. But Benedict Mathurin, I think, is an interesting one because I think he's impressed right away. Are we seeing maybe what could be the next great Canadian player here in the NBA?
I think so. I mean, when you look at his pedigree coming out of Quebec, at every level, he is, you know, overachieved what the baseline expectations were. And then you thought, okay, well, it's a nice story, lottery pick in the draft, had a great college career at Arizona as a bucket getter, but it will probably stop now. And it hasn't, quite frankly. And he's doing everything he's doing coming off the bench in Indiana. Imagine if he had more minutes and more usage rate. And with that team, like when you're not as a Raptors fan, as a Canadian watching the Raptors, throw on a Pacers game. They should be your league pass favorite because Andrew Nembhard is playing really great minutes for them at point guards. Looking across the league, Shea, again, another player that you mentioned, is playing at an all-NBA level and is a volume scorer now at this point. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I'm looking at them and I'm thinking, man, if we ever get this group together and engaged and at an Olympics, like we're going to be a problem because there are so many Canadians playing at a high level. We've had this conversation and we didn't even mention Andrew Wiggins, who just won a title and is still playing really consistently, although the Warriors have got to a slow start. And RJ Barrett, who's really growing into his role as one of the lead guards for the Knicks. And quite frankly, you know, pay attention this spring, March Madness time, because there's actually more Canadians coming. The funnel is getting bigger and bigger. It's really exciting to watch.
Yeah, it feels like with Shea, there's no excuse. But if Canadians continue to follow Shea into the NBA, I mean, it's right. It's not even if about getting there. It's like, what can you do when you get there? And hopefully they will be there and competing at the highest level soon. Let's do a little CFL, Donovan. Just in general, the post-pandemic CFL. Like, we've had a great cup. We're into the division finals after another full regular season. How has the CFL, like, sort of absorbed the COVID-19 challenges and spun it forward? What's sort of the state of the CFL right now and how it's been able to rebound in this, what was obviously a very, very difficult time in its history?
Yeah, I mean, I think the real litmus test is going to be, you know, in a couple weeks when we have, you know, the first real Grey Cup experience, you know, in a couple years. I mean, yes, there was a Grey Cup in Hamilton. The game happened. The two teams were there. There was media and press events. But Grey Cup is really a week where the entire country comes into one city and has parties and, you know, has, you know, activations. And it's essentially, you know, like a, you know, super conference for Canadian football. Now it's in the place that loves Canadian football more than any in our country, in Saskatchewan, in Regina. You know, based off of the four teams that we have left, it's tough to see a scenario where it's not going to be a great matchup. You could have, you know, a team going for the three-peat and the modern-day Dynasty and the Bombers, or, you know, the great Canadian hope, you know, the most exciting player in the league, Nathan Rourke, doing something that we really haven't seen a Canadian do at the quarterback position for decades, if not ever. And I'm really somewhat cautiously optimistic in terms of the league trending back. You've got some new energy in terms of new ownership. We saw it in the division semifinals this week. In BC, they sold out the Lower Bowl, and it was an engaged young crowd, which is a qualifier you need to make with a CFL crowd, because oftentimes, as much as I love to go to CFL games, I look around and I'm surrounded by white people with white hair. And now you're seeing a real young, engaged group in BC with a new ownership group in Omar Domen, and obviously a really good team on the field and an exciting quarterback. And in Montreal, new ownership group there as well. another beautiful crowd in Montreal. So I think some of the historical teams that have struggled, some of the teams, quite frankly, that the economics has changed, you know, since the MLS has also been fighting for your disposable income. Talking about Vancouver, talking about Montreal and Toronto, those teams are trending up. The real elephant in the room is our market here in Toronto, and whether or not we will care, whether or not we are just so oversaturated with other choices that the CFL is too far down the queue to really be engaged for a long period of time. The Argos didn't get the benefit of hosting the Tiger Cats again and having people come down the QEW to fill that building.
But we're
seeing a down era in terms of quarterback play. That's obviously going to impact viewership across the league. But I do think with some new ownership groups in some important areas, the league as a whole is trending in the right direction.
Well, that worries me a little bit because he says it's a down era for when it comes to quarterbacks. And Nathan Rourke, you said it's the story of the CFL season, and it certainly is. Canadian rookie playing quarterback for the BC Lions, 8-1. You know, the only thing keeping it from being a bigger story is that he got injured, but now he's coming back. Like, it could be all about him here, but there's a lot of noise about him going to the NFL. Like, that's why it's sort of the dilemma. It's a little bittersweet. There's not enough good quarterbacks in this league right now as is, and one that really represents hope could be out the door.
Yeah, it's true. And we were spoiled for a long time, right? We had Ricky Ray and Anthony Calvillo and Damon Allen. And then, you know, coming off the heels of that generation, you had Mike Rowley and Bo Levi Mitchell, you know, in the same province going at it. And now there's a flip side. But I think if you look at, you know, the other tackle football that happened in the fall, winter in the NFL, like, no matter how good at any time or bad the quarterback play is, people are still engaged. They're going more so for the color of the uniforms in a tribal aspect than they are the individual players. The second Amazon Prime game, they were promoting two defensive linemen because the quarterbacks in the game were so bad. And that's where we are. You know, the Sam Ellinger era has started in Indianapolis, and it's still going to be a sellout, even though, you know, the head coach on the sidelines has never coached a game at any level of football. And so I think the CFL needs to get to the point where it's not just promoting the individual players, but promoting the fact that, yeah, I want to represent my city. I really care because it means something to me that Hamilton plays well or Toronto plays well, that I'm tribal about those colors. Now, obviously, we're a long way from getting to that point, but how fluid the league is in terms of turnover of players and players coming in and out of the league and in and out of different teams, and the fact that, no, we don't have quarterbacks that are playing in the league for 15 years anymore. If you have a quarterback have a great year, that means they're probably looking to go south and cash in. Yeah, it's an economics issue. I hope we see Nathan Rourke stay, selfishly, but the way he played, he may stay for a little bit, but he's not going to stay for long.
Donovan, appreciate the perfect snippet of the diverse content and topics that you're going to cover on your new podcast and online every day, live, 11 a.m. daily as well. November 14 is when it starts, Going Deep with Donovan Bennett on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Appreciate you joining us this morning, and congrats once again.
I appreciate you having me, and congrats to you too. Once again, I really enjoyed waking up and listening. It's been really fresh.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thanks so much. We'll talk with you soon.
Cheers.
Once again, that's Donovan Bennett, who's hosting a new show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan as well, wherever you get your podcast. Going Deep with Donovan Bennett starts next week, November 14th, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, but also nationally, wherever you're tuning in from, due to the time change. You figure it out yourselves, because I don't know how to work that. Was it 9 Pacific? What's the middle one?
Mountain.
I don't know. I don't know if they all do daylight savings. Whatever.
How do they raise chickens? That's what I want to know.
No, don't bring chickens back up, okay? Holy.
Can we get to Chew before we go to
break? Yes, we got a good Chew.
Okay.
Time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
And it's not chicken. Okay, so Ryan Reynolds was rumored to be interested, obviously, in acquiring the Senators. He declined to make a statement when this came out last week. But, oh, he made a statement last night on the Jimmy Fallon Tonight Show on Monday night. So couldn't pick a bigger audience, really, to make this conversation heard. We know the Canadian movie star obviously really wants to keep the Ottawa Senators in Ottawa, which has been part of the rumored reasons behind being interested in. This was what he said when he was asked if he was interested in buying the Ottawa Senators.
So there's a rumor going around that you may be interested in buying an NHL professional hockey team, the Ottawa Senators.
The Ottawa Senators? Yes, that
is a Canadian team.
Yeah, that is it's an NHL team, the Ottawa Senators. I am trying to do that. It's a very expensive So, you know, yeah, I need a partner with, you know, really deep pockets. You know, much bigger. It's called a consortium mm-hmm. when you form a group together to buy an entity. And I just, it's such a fancy way of saying I need a sugar mommy or a sugar daddy.
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. But you do need one, yeah.
Yeah. And if that doesn't work out, I'll buy a U.S. senator, which anyone can afford. You know, that's kind of
Wait till Wednesday. Yeah,
but I love Ottawa. I grew up in Vancouver, which has my heart always. But I also grew up in Ottawa, Canada. So I spent a long time in Vanier there, which is a little town right inside Ottawa.
And hockey is just part of the system. When you grow up, that's part of your blood.
It's sad. It's scary. But children are eased out of the womb in ice skates in Canada. I mean, that's how
they really are.
They're ready to go. Yeah, NHL ready by the time they're four.
Sounds like it's a real endeavor that he's partaking in. Need someone with deep pockets, don't we all? So something to certainly chew on is this is a real thing.
I mean, I can't help but just like think about how Eugene Melnyk and him would be the exact opposite in terms of owners.
Maybe like that's what
it's
they need.
Night and day. And it's probably what you need. I think it's I can't find a bad thing or bad or a negative to this. I just can't. I think it'd be a great thing for the Ottawa Senators if Reynolds involved, and you'll get some of this Tonight Show shine. You get a lot of shine if Reynolds is involved, even if it's just a little bit. He's going to be the front-facing guy. I think that's a good thing.
If you're listening and you are a billionaire, contact Ryan Reynolds. Also, maybe help us with our Wake and Rake selections as well. That's at $5.90, $5.90. Pick your selections for tonight's NHL-only slate, really, as the NBA is off tonight. And your Maple Leafs are back in action. We're going to switch to some football after the break with one of the most lovely guests that we have ever had, his return to the show. Sam Acho is going to join us after the break. Talk a little bit about the Jeff Saturday. Sitch?
Acho in the top quartile of quartiles.
Oh, he might be.
Without question.
The top quartile.
And we'll start with the Colts.
That's next with Justin and Ailish on the Fan Morning Show.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We haven't even talked about Josh Allen news last afternoon, yesterday, which made my gut drop.
Yeah, you concerned?
A grumbling and a sadness
concerned?
Filled my body. Yeah, I'm concerned.
A little TJ?
Pretty sure that's a very much a Tommy John issue.
Yeah, it's scary. Could be a betting opportunity for us, though, in the Wake and Rake.
I will never do that. That's rough, though.
Won't you, though?
Well, I remember seeing during the game, he grabbed his arm a bit and just did the little flexing
wrong.
The tendons, but obviously didn't have his greatest performance. He said he played like bleep, which mm-hmm. I think we could agree on. But the fact that they're going to be looking into his, what is it called? His, what's that arm part called?
UCL?
Ulnar collateral ligament and related nerves.
Not good.
It's not great. But what is great? And someone that we've been waiting for to come back on the show because the vibes are always immaculate. You can hear the smiles in our voice. Sam Acho, former NFL linebacker, current ESPN analyst, and author of Let the World See You, How to Be Real in a World Full of Fakes. Sam, thanks so much for coming back on the show.
No, I'm glad to be on. Our vocabulary is immaculate, right? Let's just that, you know what I mean? That made me smile. That makes me smile immaculate.
Well, we've been really looking forward to hearing from you, especially with yesterday's news of Jeff Saturday, who's just a studio analyst put into the biggest role in the NFL, taking over as interim head coach for the Colts. What was your initial feeling or just thoughts when you saw that move yesterday?
Yeah, honestly, I was shocked and excited. And let me tell you why. I was shocked because I got a text from you guys saying, hey, you want to come and talk about, of course, the Ravens game, right? Because I played with Roquan Smith and all the guys, a bunch of my friends, former teammates, are current Ravens. And then also it said, and Jeff Saturday being named interim coach. mind you, like, I work all weekend. So, like, I just got back from work and do my thing. I'm like, interim coach of what?
Oh, we broke the news.
Yes, you broke. So, I was like, let me go and check. So, I checked and I was like, oh my gosh, I think the news had broken within the last, 40, I think it was either 17 minutes I saw one or 43 minutes. Yeah, y'all were quick. But honestly, I was, so that's where the shock came from. The second, there were three feelings. Well, really two. There was shock number one. Why are y'all breaking news to me? But I'm happy about it. Secondly, I was excited because I've worked with Jeff and I know Jeff, and I was excited for Jeff. Let me tell you why. Jeff Saturday has been a consultant with the team for years, right? He's for a long time. He's been consulting with the team. He's worked kind of part-time with the staff. They've offered him full-time jobs, not only in the NFL, but in college. He's essentially turned all of them down because he has kids who are in college and all the things. And so I was excited because I was like, oh, wow, what an opportunity. But then I went to the piece of, and that's just like my personal, oh, wow, this guy, I did shows with him at ESPN, right? We hosted a show together, NFL Rewind last year. But then the other side went to, I wonder what people's response and reaction is going to be. Because mine is different.
Mm.
I didn't play with Jeff, but I work with Jeff. I know Jeff. Jeff's a good friend of mine. Jeff, I called him immediately after and congratulated him, all the things. But I said, I wonder what the reaction is going to be. Oftentimes people will get upset about things, and oftentimes rightfully so, especially when it's either not fair or doesn't look fair. For example, I'll start with Todd Bowles. Todd Bowles got hired as the interim or as the new head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Bruce Arians was the head coach. Little way into the offseason, the season, Bruce Arians steps down before the season officially, before the game start to be played, after the league year starts. And essentially Todd Bowles is named coach. Todd Bowles, coaching experience before, head coach of the Jets, defensive coordinator with Bruce Arians for years, black head coach. So it's like, that feeling, and I know Coach Bowles as well, I was definitely excited, but also went to, man, I wonder what people are going to think, because this wasn't an interview process. This was just like, hey, I'm going to give Todd the job, and Todd Bowles is black. And, I mean, we'll see how it works out as far as, like, winning and losing, but it was like, nothing. But then this with Jeff Saturday, and here's the caveat, here's the difference, right? Everything I said before, Todd Bowles has coached, head coached the NFL, and he's been a defensive coordinator, and he's worked his way up all these years. The difference, so it's almost like, hey, he deserves a shot, which makes total sense. I actually was happy with the fact that he got the head coaching job. But then Jeff Saturday, with no experience and no head coaching, assistant coaching, whatever, in the NFL level and the college level, you could say it's by choice, or you could, whether it's by choice or not, it's a thing. Of course, people are going to be upset. Now, and there's really no way around that. As the head coach of a team, you have to be ready for criticism and a different kind of criticism. And as ESPN analysts, you get criticized for your takes or for your opinions or for your whatever people want to criticize you for. Now, you're going to get criticized a couple ways. One, for your decisions as a head coach. Let's say you remember, y'all saw how Nathaniel Hackett was making bad decisions early on in his coaching career, and he still is, right? Clock management. You'll get criticized for that. But also there's a new kind of external criticism of, well, you don't deserve this job.
Yeah.
You only got this job because you're friends with the owner. You have never even been a coach outside of a high school level, and your high school team was ranked, I think someone said it was like 183rd in the state. You know what I mean? It wasn't a good high school team. Mm. So my personal emotions and thoughts were excitement and joy, and it's still that, right? But I know others will not be that way. Number one, they don't know Jeff. But number two, the optics of it look horrible. They don't just look bad. The optics look horrible. Jim Irsay, right? So anyways, I'll stop there. We can continue. But anyways, the optics look really, really bad.
Okay, so what does it say? I guess what does it say about Irsay? But does it say something about the larger entity and the NFL? Like the NFL's decision-making processes. Like there are some provisions built in where you have to hit these certain checkpoints. You have to interview a certain amount of people and a certain kind of people, like, and all that stuff. But this can make this decision can be made on the fly. So is there is there like a loophole that was taken advantage of here? Like, how does this reflect on the NFL's decision-making process and, I guess, Jim Irsay's decision-making process?
Well, y'all don't even see me right now, but I'm actually raising my hand. Like, hey, call up, pick me, which is, I'm doing a radio call, so I don't have to raise my hand. But, like, so here's the thing. People have been saying, man, the Rooney Rule has been, you know, usurped, and there's this loophole, all these things. Even if there was a Rooney Rule for interim coaches, Jim Irsay would have still hired Jeff Saturday. Even if there was a rule that requires, the Rooney Rule requires that when you're hiring a new head coach, and even now a new general manager, you have to interview diverse candidates, whether minority candidates or even now in when it comes to management, like CEO positions, right? Interview like a woman as a candidate, right? Like not just predominantly white men, which are from, you know, 28 of the coaches right now are white men. Or,
right.
So people are saying, man, there should have been a Rooney Rule for the interim coach. Guys, even if there was the Rooney Rule that forced Jim Irsay to interview coaches, he would have picked other candidates. He would have interviewed me. Let me go interview some random person that's not going to get go interview a coach that's not going to get the job so that you can hire who you want to hire. That's the problem. So the Rooney Rule is not the solution, because there's currently a Rooney Rule in place. It's been in place for 20 years, more than 20 years. And there's still 28 of 30 four minority coaches. So the solution can't be let's expand the Rooney Rule like we've done in years past. Mind you, I believe there's 10 people on the committee that helps make the Rooney Rule, owners and, you know, chairman of team, et cetera. I think 9 of them are white men. Or maybe 8, right? So it's like the decision making isn't going to. You got to expand the Rooney. No, it's not working. So, of course, people say, well, you have to have new people in ownership because the owners are making the decisions, right? So look at that. Washington Commanders. The team is for sale. Ideally, if the owner was a minority, or at least someone with like an open mind, right? Like, you know what I mean? Then all of a sudden, when they're hiring whoever they're hiring, they're not just hiring it based off, you know. There's this based off cronyism, right? I'm hiring my friends, right? Nepotism, I'm going to hire my family. That's what usually happens. So that, I believe, is what needs to change. We could also talk – I've talked – that's what I believe needs to change, ownership.
There's
opportunities. Right now there's a perfect opportunity with the Washington Commanders. Not for sale yet, but potentially for sale soon.
Yeah, you have to change minds and mindsets because, I mean, the Brian Flores situation laid out perfectly that the Rooney Rule is very, very flawed. And, you know, what Irsay did here, it's, you know, he's picking his friend. He's picking someone that he trusts in Jeff Saturday. And again, you laid out it's conflicting for you because, you know, you believe in Jeff Saturday. You like Jeff Saturday. You know Jeff Saturday as a person. So I guess it's worth discussing the other side, which is why do you think, if you do think, Saturday will succeed with the Colts?
I don't know if he'll succeed. That's the thing. Like, I know him, I'm excited for him and the opportunity. But here's the thing. Since 2000, there's been 40 interim coaches named in the NFL. Only 10 of them have gone on to be full-time head coaches. So that's a 1 in 4 chance, 25%. You could say, man, I like his odds, but I don't know his odds because I love him as an analyst, right? But I don't know how he's going to be I don't know how the locker room will accept him. I don't know how the coaches will accept him. You have coaches who are on staff currently who have gotten jumped over by not just an external candidate with experience, but you got jumped over by a guy who was on ESPN. And I feel weird saying this because, shoot, if it was me, I would love that job. not this job as the head coach of the Colts, but like, opportunity to be, hey, Sam, come do something with the Bears or the Cardinals, whatever. It's like, well, you've just been doing ESPN. I have all my reasons why I think I'd be great for the job, but I don't know if it'll be successful. The questions are this, twofold. One, how will the other coaches respond to him? That's first and foremost. Yes, he's a leader of men. I believe he can do that. But how will the other coaches? There's a lot of politics that are played in NFL locker rooms. Coaches form cliques. They know the season's not going well. They know people are going to get fired, so they form cliques. They can go and be hired by other coaches when this staff gets disassembled, dissolved. And so that's a real thing. The general manager They said he was on board with it, but I'm confident it's an Irsay decision. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a whole nother, it's like, that's a whole, okay, you got your coaching and that's one side of it. The GM's a whole nother side. So how will he be respected by the other coaches who have been doing this for 20, 30 years and got overlooked? That's like problem number one. And then problem number two, which I think is probably easier to solve, is the player side of it. Because players, I think, will respect him, understand him, probably be happy for him because he's been around the team. He's been a consultant for the team for years. Like, he's been – we haven't seen it. No one's talked about it. But he goes and he helps with their – he said it pretty much like he doesn't sit in on all the meetings, but he's talking with the coaches, with the offensive – he's helping out the offensive line coach and protection. And he's – you know what I mean? So he's done that in an unofficial capacity. So I think that the players will respect him and listen, but – it's one thing to be unofficial and an unofficial consultant, another thing to be the head coach who now you're the other people below you who used to be next to you, now they report to you. That's the issue.
I mean, it's going to be a prime viewing, I think, this Sunday when they face the Raiders, especially because of his one of his tweets where he said the Raiders look terrible. I just think it's going to be interesting for fans, to say the least, multifaceted reasons why this could be great, and it could be also a little bit exposing of the way that the NFL works, as you mentioned. Let's pivot over to Josh Allen. Before we brought you in, we're sharing the news that he's going to undergo some testing on his elbow. What's your level of concern with where this could be in terms of like the injury itself and where that might take the Bills if it is as devastating as it could be?
Well, yeah, I'm concerned. I'm concerned. When I was concerned when they lost. I was concerned with the interception. Some of those looked non-Josh Allen-like. And I get it. There were some interceptions the week before that you're wondering, man, why is he throwing that? He's trying to force some balls. But this, I was concerned with some of the picks that I saw. And then I got those concerns dwindled in comparison. It's like a candle to the sun to the fact how bad this injury could be. Because though Case Keenum is a formidable quarterback and he knows how to – handle an offense and run an offense, all the things. Like he started in the league before he can start. He's not Josh Allen. He's not a guy who was potentially going to be MVP or in the MVP conversation, leading the team that was favored for the Super Bowl. So that's where my concerns start. Can he get the ball downfield the way that Josh Allen got the ball downfield to Gabe, the passes we saw to Gabe Davis, that 99-yard touchdown from a couple weeks ago? Some of the passes that have been like, can he do that? He can't make people miss in the open field. It's really him and Patrick Mahomes, the only guys, and Lamar Jackson, right? Justin Fields. Okay, there's a lot of guys, but like he can't do those things. Case Keenum can't do those things, extend plays like Josh Allen. And so I don't know how bad this injury is or could be, but I'm concerned because you heard the internal concerns about Keenum making the plays that Josh Allen could make. But then externally, the Chiefs are ready for the Bills. We're talking about Super Bowls and playoffs. Chiefs, like the Bills may not be the favorite in that game if they were to play right now for an AFC championship again or AFC divisional round. The Ravens, I'd be concerned if I'm playing them with Josh Allen. So my level of concern is high because there's only a few quarterbacks in the NFL like Josh Allen. And yes, the Bills have the number one defense, at least had it going into, maybe not last week or a few weeks ago, had the number one defense. But defense can only take you so far without Josh Allen.
We're chatting with Sam Acho, former NFL linebacker, current ESPN analyst, and author of Let the World See You, How to Be Real in a World Full of Fakes. Now, I look at that book title this morning, and the only thing I saw was Kyrie Irving. Like, it just jumped off the page to me that book title and Kyrie Irving, because I don't want to say he's a fake, but I feel like he's engendering fakes, right? That people are sort of, looking at what he's doing and maybe, looking at what he's trying to promote and becoming, fake conspirators themselves. And I guess we're getting a little bit deep here, but I want to ask you about like that problem and the what's plaguing the NBA right now, which is like the idea that these athletes have such a large platform and anything they do can, really have a chain reaction and a ripple effect and really affect things and communities and people to a really profound degree. We saw like what he was spreading, the movie or film or and book chart, rising in the charts. Like, that's dangerous, dangerous stuff. So what do you make of the Kyrie Irving situation and just the idea that athletes have this platform that they can really, really quickly misuse?
Yeah, no, it's not good. Like, somebody texted me the other day, I was on set, and they're like, what do you think about the Kyrie Irving? I just said, no bueno. It's not good for a couple of reasons. Number one, with the climate that we're in right now, specifically, I'm hearing some of the stuff that Kanye has been saying, right? And then even going back, like, we could start there, we could also end there, but we also going back to, like, these last couple of years of, like, the racial tension in America. Like, just like, putting all that together, right? Not just black people feeling, hey, George, but also, like, going to the Asian community. Remember when COVID happened?
Mm-hmm. Of course.
You know what I mean? Like, there was, like... And so it's almost like you've got to be careful, because even if you—and I'm not saying he did or didn't intend to do what he stir up more hate and vitriol. Even if you didn't intend it, it's happening, or it happened. So at that point, and I, like, you have to not only apologize, but not only be sincere about it, but understand. No, not your platform or whatever what you get says, what you say, make it, take it out of context. Understand that, like, you got to be a voice for good or a movement for good. You can't just join the party with everybody else, the Kanyes of the world or the, you know what I mean, or the people who were killing George Floyd. You know what? You don't want to join that party or people who are, like going to massage parlors where the new Asian people are working again. You don't want to be that. So, like, you have an opportunity to be different. Yeah, and not different in a way of like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to be, the man can't tell me what to say, and how can I be, you know, anti-Semitic when I don't know who I am? Dude, you can't be anti-Semitic and know who you are. There's a lot of black people that hate black people. That's a real thing, right? Asian people hate Asian. Like, you can easily. So there is a level of concern because – I don't think now is the time to be sitting on the sideline, Kyrie, and just saying, well, mm-hmm. I posted this. I'm just going to just let it happen, right? And I'm not saying, like, some people say, well, if you don't speak out against it, then you're part of the problem. I'm not even going that far, right? Not for him. I'm talking about us, right? We're talking about us, right? Like, I'm not a guy who's going to go tweet about everything. Oh, well, Kyrie shouldn't have said this. That's not me. I love building things. So, like, what I do is I go to the community. I try to help build things, right? Like, when George Floyd was killed and Ahmaud Arbery was killed and there was rioting and looting order. Like, I went to the south side of Chicago and the west side, and I started listening to some of the people in the community and figuring out what they needed. Mind you, I've been here for some years, but, like, and we got a chance to build something. We got a chance to go and build, and we realized that this problem is deeper than just one or two people being killed. It's an issue of, like, people have been forgotten about. We took a tour of the west side of Chicago and realized, oh, wow, like, there is a food desert here. We saw one grocery store and 10 liquor stores. So we say, hey, what if my solution, I'm going to go and help. Hey, what do y'all need? They said, man, we need food. So me and some teammates, some friends got together. We built a food mart in a food desert. Right. And now we're making that. And now the kids work in there. Now they're getting food. This in a half mile radius, statistically, this is what the food desert is, but half mile radius in this neighborhood, there was 2 grocery stores and 17 liquor stores. Mm. So we tore down a liquor store and built up a food mart. We bought it, we tore it down, built up a food mart. Now kids working there. Now we're providing hope and community. Whatever. That's one way. Another way is, like, on another part in the west side of Chicago, we're building a state-of-the-art sports facility where, like, now instead of people going out in the street and, you know, gangs and stuff, now, hey, there's a place you can go and, like, get state-of-the-art, world-class training. And now Jason Hayward, who played for the Chicago Cubs, we partnered with him, and he's building a Jason Hayward Baseball Academy. Because he realized, man, people of color don't really play – black people don't play baseball. And I want more people who look like me to go play baseball, so he's doing that. We partnered with the Chicago Fire, the soccer team, to build a best-in-class, like, full-size indoor – so I'm writing about this in my next book that's coming out in March, right? So my whole point is, it's almost like this thing, like, you're either for me or you're against me. You can't be in the middle, mm-hmm. right? Kyrie, you're either supporting it or you're speaking out again. You can't be in the middle. And speaking out does not mean I'm going to tweet every time and say, Kyrie, you're the dumb. No, my speaking out is yeah, that was idiotic, but let me go and build. Mm-hmm. So many people wanted to speak out and say, Kyrie's the worst or, you know, whatever. tweet about, you know, hey, Black Lives do matter, and let's tweet that out, and I'm going to put my company, we're going to pledge, and they don't do anything. I spoke at a conference a couple weeks ago, PR Week, the top PR executives from, you know, name the company, Pepsi, whatever, name the company. Mm-hmm. And they were saying, man, 2 years ago, we made all these pledges, but we haven't done anything.
Yeah,
so
it's
got to be
action,
more than
really.
Just,
yeah.
Thank you. Exactly. So anyway, that's my, you know, like, yes, Kyrie, understand your platform, but also mm-hmm. understand you is no middle ground, especially now.
Especially if you're an athlete, they have the one of the, probably the yeah. arguably the biggest platforms in the world. Kids look up to them, you know, sponsorship yeah. deals. And if your words are, have that impact, so do your actions. So I think you put it just perfectly, and you're an incredible example of doing the right thing and using your platform particularly well. Sam, we appreciate you joining us as always. Great to hear your insight, and we'll talk. Hopefully, get to talk with you soon.
Yes, love being on with y'all. Thanks so much. It was immaculate.
I love that. Sam Acho, former NFL linebacker and current ESPN analyst, and of course, author of Let the World See You, How to Be Real in a World Full of Fakes. I think everybody can learn a little bit from that book, specifically maybe Kyrie Irving. We'll take a break, and we're going to talk to Gary Lawless on the other side. Vegas Golden Knights are here in town to face your Toronto Maple Leafs. This guy knows them well. We'll get the pulse of the Jack Eichel return and how the Golden Knights are feeling, rolling in here on a 7-game winning streak. That's next on the Fan Morning Show with Justin and Ailish.